I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wished I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. The following conversation is about how one man's relationship with another man he never met deepened and changed. Most of us know theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer as part of a dissident group of World War II German theologians who was executed by the Nazis for his participation in an attempt to assassinate Hitler. Charlottesville's Charles March wrote what he calls his lumbering doctoral dissertation on Dietrich Bonhoeffer 25 years ago. And this year, he's published Strange Glory, A Life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, which the Wall Street Journal reviewer called a hell of a story. So, I asked Charles March, how did your relationship with Bonhoeffer change during the 8 years you worked on Strange Glory?
Well, I was lucky enough to receive the Dietrich Bonhoeffer Visiting Professorship at the University of Berlin in the spring of 2007. And although this prestigious-sounding fellowship did not come with a salary or a travel stipend, or I don't think I had access to a printer, I did have a nice office. And soon enough, I made my first trip to the Berlin Staatsbibliothek, the city library. And in this lovely, light-filled space, I gained access to the recently obtained Dietrich Bonhoeffer papers. These had been sold, I think, to the library by the estate of Bonhoeffer's best friend and biographer, a man named Eberhard Baedtke. Had not yet been cataloged, but a wonderful special collections director, Dr. Jutta Weber, said I could work with those. So, you know, every morning for weeks, I would go in and I would look at these letters and photographs, and all these discoveries began to illuminate in my mind a very intriguingly different image of the Bonhoeffer I had carried with me since writing that lumbering doctoral dissertation. For example, there was a stash of gorgeous landscape photographs that Bonhoeffer himself had taken on his two trips to North Africa. There were postcards from Waco, Texas, from Lubbock, Texas, from various outposts, written during a cross-country road trip that Bonhoeffer had made with a fellow European in the spring of 1931. There was a huge file of notes and writings and essays on race relations in America. There was a file of studies on lynchings in America, files on the ACLU and various progressive church-based human rights organizations that Bonhoeffer had encountered during 1931. There was a brief correspondence with Gandhi from 1934 when Bonhoeffer was preaching and pastoring a church in London for a year and a half.
And you got to touch it.
Yes, I got to touch it. You know, a year after the passage of the 1933 Nuremberg Laws, was trying to imagine a way of creating a community in Germany that would nurture a culture of dissidence around contemplative disciplines and peacemaking. And he had been introduced to Gandhi's work by a theologian named Reinhold Niebuhr in America. And he had this lovely correspondence with Gandhi, and Gandhi invited him to come live in his ashram. It was one of Bonhoeffer's greatest regrets that he was not able to, but instead he went to northern Germany and created this radical community of Christian peacemakers. There was an inventory of his wardrobe. As it turns out, the great martyr and saint of the church was a fashion hound. And he kept meticulous records of his dress and his shoes and his various...
And he loved all the clothing, attention he played to his clothing in the book.
Exactly.
And
less surprising was a meticulous inventory of his library. But I was quite amused by one of his letters to Father Christmas. He couldn't have been more than 13 at the time, when he asked for the complete writings of Immanuel Kant. This is not what I was asking for when I was 13 years old. But in any case, this all illuminated to me a fascinatingly different portrait. And so what I did, I took all the biographies that had been written by Bonhoeffer and I just hid them in the basement of my house.
Really?
Really. I thought the only way I could let these surprising, wonderful, sometimes even shocking revelations appear and form character and story and narrative was to rely only on primary documents. And so my goal was to hide all these biographies, use only these new materials until I finished one complete draft of the biography. And so one morning in, I guess, 2010, I had this unwieldy 2,200-page draft of the biography, and I finally went and 2,200 pages, which, of course, my editor did not want to see. But at least I had something there. It had a beginning and kind of eventually there was an end. But I then was able to go back and look at some of the earlier biographies to check facts and to look more carefully at some more complicated historical aspects of the story just to make sure that I got them right. But it's just my hope that I've created a vivid and rounded and somewhat surprising portrait of a great, courageous Christian thinker, an activist, and martyr, shall we say, without making him out to be a saint.
Yeah.
He's much more interesting, in fact, and much more, you know, sort of empathetic and, you know, alive to see him in his humanity and his faults and his joys and as a fully human person.
Did you get sick of him?
This is what's so interesting to me and kind of surprising. I have a very good friend who wrote a beautiful biography of C.S. Lewis called The Narnian, Alan Jacobs. He's one of our great culture critics and writers. Alan banged his biography out in about 2 years and managed to also publish it around the release of all of the Narnia movies. And it was a great, you know, tie-in for him. But I remember Alan, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he told me after he had finished the biography, he said, look, I don't ever want to hear C.S. Lewis' name mentioned again. There's not a whole lot more I feel like I have to learn from his life. And, you know, I feel just the opposite. What surprises me is after working on this book for 8 years, my admiration and my intrigue with Bonhoeffer's life and thought is deeper and in some respects even insatiable.
Are you ever frustrated that this man is dead? Do you have imaginary conversations with him?
That's a really interesting question. There was a review of Strange Glory in the Wall Street Journal. Christian Wyman, the reviewer, who's this amazing poet and memoirist, wondered if I had somehow managed to channel Bonhoeffer during these 8 years of my writing, that my immersion became so deep and so intense. I don't know whether that's true, but I do feel like he is very close to me, imaginatively, and kind of as a spiritual fellow traveler. And so I haven't felt this longing to meet him in person. I feel like that kind of friendship has in some way been forged.
You'll find links, pictures, and more of my conversation with Charles Marsh on the Spark page at WMRA.org.